A weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the creepiest eyes in the business. It's I think we're still calling it Weekly Wildy unless he wants to call it something else. That's Jason Wildy. I'm Alex Strofe with you ahead of a week two game between the Packers and the Colts with a likely backup quarterback for Green Bay. Hi, Jason. We'll get to that. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. You were just telling me you didn't like my beard, so I'm thinking about shaving before we actually start the episode today. But
you should shave on the episode.
If I had a razor, I would consider. That's actually not a horrible idea. Maybe next week. There's always next
week. Maybe Mr. Irrelevant. Yeah. Do it on Mr. Irrelevant.
We'll do that tomorrow ahead of a big football weekend.
You're very manly. You're very virile. I'm just not a facial hair guy. A little stubble, fine, but
sure.
You know, you're starting to look like Isaiah McDuffie at this point.
Hey, if I look like an NFL linebacker, that means I'm doing something right, I guess, right?
Mr. Beard.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm certainly not as masculine as him. All right, let's dive into this, Jason, because I'm very fascinated by how Matt LaFleur is setting up this weekend in terms of the quarterback position. You're not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I think we can both say Jordan Love is going to be out week two against the Indianapolis Colts, but the head coach won't say that. He said the window is certainly open, and he doesn't need to practice in order to play. But I would imagine you and I are both entering this weekend with the mindset of it will be the Malik Willis show for the Green Bay Packers.
No, Matt LaFleur says the door is pretty open, so it must be pretty open. So he's clearly going to play this week, and it's not my job to interpret what people say or say, well, he's not really saying what it's – hey, he said the door is pretty open. So that must mean that there's a pretty good chance that Jordan Love will be the starting quarterback on Sunday. And until I'm proven otherwise, which could be as soon as Friday when the injury report comes out and they could rule him out and frankly should rule him out but won't maybe – I'm just going to go with what the coach says, and the coach says the door's pretty open.
And I've been immunized.
I mean, that's fair. Here's the thing I don't get.
Sure.
I was talking about this with Gabe Neitzel earlier. If you were so concerned about showing confidence in Malik Willis that you disputed whether it be through back channels or publicly, that you at least inquired about whether or not Ryan Tannehill would be interested. If you're so concerned about Malik Willis's confidence that you didn't want that to be out there, then what does it do for Malik Willis's confidence to be publicly suggesting that Jordan Love could still play? And having, by the way, Malik Willis in on the conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, of him having to talk not about how excited he is to make the first start as a Packer, but you know, if they need me, if Jordan's not able to go, I just don't understand what they're accomplishing. I was on with the ESPN affiliate in Indianapolis early on Thursday morning, and the Colts don't think that Jordan Love's playing. Like, they're not tricking the Colts. The Colts are preparing for Malik. What you talking about, Willis? So I don't know why we're doing this. And my biggest thing is, I know Pat McKenzie. I know how conservative he is. You know, I was in Doc McKenzie's office on Monday, Eddie, with Herney, and I know how conservative he wanted to be with a 14-year-old cross-country runner. You don't think he's going to be conservative with a $220 million 25-year-old quarterback in the National Football League? So, again, I don't understand it. And hey, we can do this next week, hopefully with a different name for the show. And I'll have to have my mea culpa and say, hey, Matt LaFleur wasn't bluffing, and Jordan Love played great, and they're 1-1 because Jordan Love on a bum knee led them to victory against the Indianapolis Colts. I just don't see that as being the case.
All right, let's dive into the what you're talking about, Willis, portion with Alex Strofe and Jason Wildy here on ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube.
You got kind of a frog in your throat today. You all right?
Yeah, it's early. We record this at 8 a.m. You know, I just got up at 7, ooh, so maybe I need to, like, start singing in the shower, I think, to get the vocal warm-up in.
Okay, what would you sing?
Probably some Whitney, maybe some Taylor, I don't know.
Wow, okay.
Some of the talented female vocalists.
Whitney Houston?
Yeah. One of the greatest vocalists of all time.
The greatest love.
Hey, they asked for me to sing, not you. Yeah. So what you talking about, Willis portion of our program? You got the chance to talk to Malik Willis. You just referenced he was kind of playing the gamesmanship that Matt LaFleur was playing, stating, you know, if they need me, as you just referenced. When you talk with Malik Willis, what do you sense the confidence level is for a guy that's only been in Green Bay just over 2 weeks at this point?
Yeah, it was an interesting deal yesterday. So I don't know Malik Willis I do know him from Malik Heath, who does have the locker right next to him. So I find it odd.
Well, that's confusing.
If you yell, "Hey, Malik," are two people going to turn if you're yelling in the same direction? But I asked him, you know. Again, I don't think I think I ask the tough questions when they're required. I'm not afraid of that by any means, even if it's to, you know, I still love my Aaron Rodgers question after they lost to the Lions in the finale in 2022. I said, you know, you're a basketball guy. You've heard the phrase "ball don't lie." It means that you get what you deserve. You guys get what you deserve with the way you played all season, that you would lose this game when you could have gone to the playoffs if you won. Like, I'm not bothered by that. But what I asked Malik Willis yesterday, which really took me by surprise, was what I thought was a pretty innocuous question, which was, hey, you know, we're just getting to know you. You're not going to be the way you are with us necessarily, with your teammates or on the field. But are you pretty, is what we're seeing kind of who you really are, pretty even keeled and calm? And his response was, I'm not sure how to answer that. I just don't. I know y'all be trying to get us, so I just be trying to keep it cool with y'all. I don't want no beef, I swear.
Okay, hold on. Y'all are trying to get us.
Yeah, that's what he said.
What does that mean?
I just be trying to keep it cool with y'all. I don't want no beef. Look, I'm not telling this story to make fun of Malik at all, because then I hung around by the laundry bin that's by the quarterback's locker, and while he was let him change, and he was talking to Tom Fanning and PR, but I wanted to address this with him because I've done this a long time. And what the first thought I had was, Malik, who hurt you?
Yep.
Right? That's a function of that. That has to be. So I said, look, I don't want to get, I pulled him aside or stopped him. And I said, look, I don't want us to get off on the wrong foot. I said, I know there's some real jerks down there in Tennessee. My buddy Paul Kuharski is down there, and Paul Kuharski is harsh. He was at ESPN. He was at the Tennessee. I mean, he's a really good reporter, but he and I are different. He's way tougher than me. And I don't know if it was him or if it was somebody else, but clearly Malik Willis has been through some stuff with the media. I said, look, I'm not trying to get you. I think you'll find that with this group of reporters, if you play poorly, we're going to ask you questions about playing poorly, but we're not trying to get you. We're not trying to make you look bad. We're a pretty professional group around here. He's like, look, I get it. You know, I didn't know how to answer that. And I'm like, look, don't worry about it. Okay. I don't know you. You don't know me, but I clearly there are scars for him from his time in Tennessee. And that is, and the reason I tell this story is not, hey, look at me. I had this interaction with Malik Willis. I think it tells us a little bit about where he's at in his NFL journey, because, you know, and Tausch and I have talked about this with his career. Like, yes, your talent, your work ethic, your attitude, your mental approach, all those things matter to your success in the NFL, but situations matter too. And Malik Willis is where he is. Quite frankly, he is the negative, like with old photos before they were digital, he is the negative image of what could have been Jordan Love, right? Packers draft Jordan Love in 2020. He sits for 3 years behind Aaron Rodgers. Had he played in 2020, he would have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
In 2021, he did suck in the one game we played.
Mm-hmm.
They make excuses for him, but one of the reasons why I was just talking about this with a buddy of mine, one of the reasons why Devontae Adams isn't a Packer anymore isn't just the low ball offer that he got from the Packers. It was that he did not believe, he's admitted this publicly, so I'm not making this up. Devontae didn't believe that Jordan Love was going to be good. And I'm sure he regrets the hell out of that decision now because he's playing with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell in Las Vegas, and you saw his frustration on Receiver on Netflix, right? So my point is that Malik Willis is drafted in the third round in 2022 by John Robinson, the GM of the Titans at the time, one of Goody's best friends in scouting. And the plan is for him to do what Jordan Love had done for his first two seasons. Like, this is the 2022 draft. They've already seen the Packers sit Jordan Love for 2 years. And instead of sitting behind Ryan Tannehill for 2 years and then getting his opportunity and maybe being much more prepared for it, he starts three games as a rookie. By his own admission, he was terrible. And then the GM gets fired in December of his rookie year. They bring in a new GM who drafts Will Levis, which is a giant sign that says, we don't think Malik Willis is going to be any good. So then he has a wasted year there where he's backing up Will Levis and backing up Tannehill. And then he ends up getting traded. He has three different coordinators in 2.5 years. Now he's got a fourth offense. Like, what's realistic to expect of this kid in terms of succeeding? And so do I think he's going to play Star Spangled Awesome on Sunday? I mean, if he plays, of course. No, I don't think he is. Do I wonder if we had a Doc Brown's time machine and we could go back to the draft in 2022 and he goes somewhere else where he actually does get to sit, and now this year, in year three in the NFL, he's starting for that team, if he has a much better chance of being a good player? I do believe that, but that's not how his career, unfortunately for him, has played out.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff there, Jason. The four coordinators now is really, I don't want to say concerning, but I mean, that's the word that comes to mind for Malik Willis, because you're right. He hasn't really been put in a position to succeed throughout the entirety of his NFL career. Now, when it comes to being put in a position to succeed, I feel like this is probably one of the friendlier systems he could jump into after only 2.5 weeks in the system under head coach and play caller Matt LaFleur, who's obviously touted for his offensive ingenuity and creativity. And I think he will do things to put Malik Willis in a position to succeed. But when it comes to Malik Willis running this offense, we saw a year ago in Jordan Love's first year as the starter and a ton of rookies around him, they really sized down the playbook in the early half of the season. I imagine that's what we'll see Sunday against Indianapolis for a guy who's only been in town for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, LaFleur keeps saying he's not a rookie, which is true. He's not.
That is true.
And he does have a process for his preparation, which was one of the other things we talked about, and I didn't get a good answer on that either. But
footwork, Jason, footwork.
Yeah, when I asked Malik Willis about his process, he said, it's a very detailed process that I'm not going to share with you. Okay. We're going to be pals. So, look, I don't know what approach they're going to take, but the fact of the matter is that their offense struggled during the first half of last season, in part because Matt LaFleur and Adam Stenovich and Tom Clements and Jason Vrabel were all figuring out what the hell to do with all these young guys and a first-year starter at quarterback. Now, the difference now is we have a better idea what Jaden Reed is. We have a better idea what Dontavion Wicks is. We have a better idea what Christian Watson is in year three. We know what Romeo Doubs can do. Apparently, we have a different opinion at tight end than we had a year ago at this time. But the bottom line is that they know what they've got to work with. They just don't know how effectively the quarterback can get those guys the football.
Yeah, that's a good point. we will see on that front. I've heard you compare this Jordan Love injury early in the season a lot to the 2013 season when Aaron Rodgers went down early in the year with a broken clavicle. He missed seven games. The Packers still won the North and made the playoffs in 2013. Why is that the year that pops out to you when you compare Jordan Love's MCL injury in week one against the Eagles? Why is it 2013 that comes to your head?
Because they did the same thing at the end of training camp that they did this time, right? In 2013, you were probably, you know, trying to get Vince Young to ride your bike.
A little older than that.
You were what, 14?
2013, I would have been 15. So yeah, I was like a freshman in high school.
There's still freshmen in high school that have guys trying to ride their bikes, but
not this freshman in high school.
Yeah, you're way too cool. I'm sorry. So they had three quarterbacks in camp with Rodgers. They had Graham Harrell, they had B.J. Coleman, and they had Vince Young. And they cut them all. They didn't want any of them. They end up with Seneca Wallace, who at least had a little more starting experience than Malik Willis has. And they end up with Scott Tolzien. And I love Scott Tolzien. Like, and frankly, he didn't play that poorly. I mean, he did have three interceptions in a game in New York against the Giants, in a game in which he threw for 339 yards as well. But they basically said, okay, well, here we go. Rodgers has been largely indestructible, except for that concussion he had in 2010. He's played through everything else. So they rolled the dice on backups that were not in camp with them and were not with them all offseason. Now we're back to doing the same thing with Malik Willis. And lo and behold, just like in 2013, that had to be the year in which Rodgers got hurt. Now they had a little more time. He got hurt November 4th. It was not September 6th. So it was two more months that Scotty and Seneca were at least in the system. But, you know, Seneca Wallace played poorly in relief against the Bears after he got hurt. And then he goes and gets hurt on the opening series against the Eagles. And now it's Scott Tolzien that's in at quarterback. And the season is saved because of Matt Flynn. Because Matt Flynn knows the system, comes back, gets ramped up quickly. They go 2-2-1 in the five games that he plays in. And that's enough to keep them afloat. There's no comparison to 2017 because Brett Hundley had been in their system right for several years. And Brett Hundley just wasn't very good. He was who we thought he was when they drafted him. They claimed, you know, oh, they could fix his inaccuracy and that, you know, he was a steal in the fifth round. He wasn't good enough to keep him afloat, to give him a chance. And Matt Flynn was. They go in. Obviously, they got some help from the Bears that year, losing games they probably shouldn't have. But they go into the last game of the year with a chance to win the division, basically an NFC North championship game. Winner goes to the playoffs, loser goes home. And they have that miraculous final drive where they convert three fourth downs, including the touchdown to Cobb, and they make the playoffs.
So not to get too deep into Analogyville here, Jason. So I in this analogy, though, does that make Malik Willis, both Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien? I would imagine that makes Sean Clifford, Brett Hundley, and I guess Matt Flynn would be Michael Pratt, I guess, if I'm assigning characters to the multiple seasons you just brought up.
Yeah, there's no Matt Flynn, unless they bring back Matt Flynn, but he's not familiar with this offense. Yeah. No, I think it's Malik Willis is some combination of Seneca Wallace and Scotty Tolzien. The bottom line is they have a quarterback now that is not familiar with their system because they, you know, at least in Goody's opinion, invested in the wrong quarterbacks. Now, I don't need to relitigate this, but Taylor Heinicke was there for the taking. Literally there for the taking because the Atlanta Falcons did indeed trade him to the Los Angeles Chargers to back up Justin Herbert. So the Packers preferred to pursue Malik Willis, but they easily could have gone and, you know, their scouting staff, I don't know, they don't like Taylor Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke came into Lambeau Field and played a hell of a football game for.
Sure did.
I don't know if they were the Commanders yet or if they were just the Washington football team that day, but the bottom line is Taylor Heinicke has started 29 NFL games. So if my only point when they traded for Malik Willis, because I am pro Malik Willis. I want him to get the opportunity to develop and get the chance to see what he's capable of being. I hate unrealized potential, and I feel like he's, because of the circumstances, that's what he's living with. But I suggested Taylor Heinicke long before that trade, only because if you have Super Bowl aspirations, even if you think your quarterback is durable, the odds are that something crappy is going to happen to him. He's an outlier. They, again, 68 different players started at least one game at quarterback in 2022 around the league. 66 different quarterbacks started at least one game last year. The fact that Jordan Love was one of nine guys that started all 17 of his games did not mean that he was going to be able to do it a second year in a row. Although, of course, he's going to start on Sunday, as we all know, so it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is if you have Super Bowl aspirations, you may want to consider the $4.7 million that Taylor Heinicke is costing the Chargers to have a guy who started and who can go in there and win games for you. Maybe Malik Willis proves to be that guy, but I think the odds are against that being the case on Sunday.
Yeah, the odds are certainly against it. Just to clean up some of the things you just said there, Jason, Heinicke traded to the Chargers for just a sixth-round pick. The Packers traded for Willis with a seventh-round pick, so it wasn't that much of a difference to get Heinicke than it would be what they ultimately got in Malik Willis. And the other part of that, too, Jason, is I'm certainly intrigued to see why they're playing the word games, the coach speak, the Love is cleared. Because you said earlier, the Colts aren't falling for this. I don't really understand the point in all this. And maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't, as we move on into week two, as the Packers take on the Colts. Want to get to four downs in a second, but quickly want to hit on the Jeff Hafley defense. They allow 34 points in the opener against Philadelphia. There were some good moments early, a couple of turnovers early, three turnovers early in that game. But ultimately, Saquon Barkley had a Saquon Barkley day. The rush defense doesn't seem like it's a whole lot different than the Joe Barry scheme that we were used to seeing get slashed by elite running backs and David Montgomery. So what are your takeaways from the Jeff Hafley defense as we finally got to see it on display week one in Brazil?
Yeah, look, it's a really good offense they faced, right?
Sure is.
It was one of the highest scoring offenses in the league the last 2 years. So you expect them to score points. B, you get what you get when you don't play in the preseason. You get missed tackles. You get bad. You know, I asked LaFleur about that the other day, and LaFleur talked about how they took some bad tackling angles. Well, you can run that stuff in practice all you want, but in the game, it's different. The speed is different. And so an angle that may have worked on Marshawn Lloyd during practice at Reinitschke Field is not the right angle on Saquon Barkley, maybe, right? And so I don't think there's any reason to panic. This doesn't change my expectation for the defense. LaFleur said, you know, the biggest jump is from week one to week two. I mean, he could have played his defense, right? He could have done that in the preseason. I mean, I always go back to when Dom Capers got here in 2009, and I know we were all taking different approaches to preseason back then. They weren't doing joint practices with teams back then. But Dom Capers said, F it. We're going out there. We're going to run our stuff. We're going to play our guys because they need to run this stuff in games to be ready for the season. That 09 and 10 defenses were pretty good. Sure. And from the jump, largely. And so I wasn't surprised. I wasn't disappointed. That's a really good offense. You combine a really good offense with very little time together in game situations. You know, they did get the takeaways. That was huge. The offense was the one that didn't cash in on the takeaways as effectively as it needed to. But, the one blemish that they deserve to be crushed for, and I know they got a penalty that was kind of bogus to keep it going, but with the game on the line in the fourth quarter and your team trailing by two, you got to get off the grass, man. You can't go 16 plays, 67 yards, 7.5 minutes. That's the stuff that got Joe Barry fired. So you can't do that. And so that would be the one area where I don't care. You're now in the fourth quarter. You've played three quarters of the game. Get off the field. And I think Jeff Hafley will, later on Thursday when he talks to us, will probably acknowledge that that was the biggest failure.
I would imagine so. All right, let's dive into four downs. I want to start with something you just touched on briefly, but week one in the NFL, obviously, in the books here as we record on Thursday morning. Week two starts tonight. A lot of teams looking like it was the preseason in week one. A lot of sloppy football played week one. You just mentioned how a lot of starters weren't playing in the preseason across the league. How far away do you think we are from two preseason games, 18 regular season games? Because obviously that's the direction we're heading, given how much money the NFL makes and how much these TV deals are worth. How far away do you think we are from the two preseason, 18 regular season game schedule?
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a labor relations expert. So I don't know if they can push that through while the current CBA between the league and the Players Association is in effect. I feel like they probably can. They can negotiate and rewrite the, you know, kind of tear up the CBA like they tear up a contract when a guy maybe gets an extension. We all know that they want this, and now you got Goodell coming out before the Brazil game saying that he wants 16 international games. Okay, great. Then you definitely want 18 games, right? Because right now, the team that has the extra home game is usually the team that has to give that up then and play the game in Brazil, like the Eagles did, or like the Packers did in 2022, going to London. Look, I don't know when it's going to happen, but we all know it's going to happen, right? I mean, all the things that happen in this league, including all the partnerships they have with DraftKings and all the, like, it wasn't that long ago where they were fighting tooth and nail against that. So what's the answer for everything? Money. And there's money to be made with an 18th game. I'll be curious if we get to a point where it's zero preseason games and 20 regular season games.
I wouldn't doubt it.
They got to get to 18 first, and then they'll get to 20.
Yeah, that's fair. Second down. It's backup quarterback week for the Green Bay Packers as Malik Willis will likely start. I don't know. Not according to Matt LaFleur.
Likely. That's strong. Perhaps. Possibly. But it's like yes or no.
Yeah, no doubt. Yes or no with Jason Wilde on Green Bay Game Day, which you can hear beginning at 9 o'clock this Sunday. Just outside of Lambeau Field, Jason will join us for the entire 10 o'clock hour. Gabe Neitzel and Super Bowl champ Jarrett Bush up in Green Bay on Sunday on ESPN Wisconsin. Second down, who's the most hyped backup quarterback that you've covered in Green Bay?
Ooh, well, I don't take credit for a lot, but since this guy loves to give me credit for it, I will take credit for it. And that's Matt Hasselbeck.
That's where I figured you were going.
I wrote a story in the State Journal calling him Mr. August, and it stuck, which, you know, I don't know. You know, Rodgers always would give nicknames to guys. He nicknamed Tausch Cat Pig. Which
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I know I've said that on the air before, so Tausch is probably going to get mad at me, but let's keep that off of social media just in case. Because he's cat like, he had great feet, he's really nimble, but you know, he was kind of making a comment on maybe Tausch's appearance, right? So, we should just cut this out completely now that I think about it, because I don't want to deal with the backlash. But anyway, I called him Mr. August, and he always delivered. I mean, he was great in preseason, back when you actually played in preseason. And you know what he went on to do, right? He was a three-time Pro Bowler. He took a team to the Super Bowl. Probably should have won that Super Bowl, frankly, against the Steelers. And then he was the kind of backup quarterback that I would want if I was a GM. Former starter who can shepherd a young quarterback through the all the ups and downs early in his career, can play if he has to. Like, that's my idea. I would love to have three quarterbacks if I was a GM. My starter, my veteran backup who can help me whenever I have to have him play, and then my developmental guy that I think can become our future starter or be trade bait to another team, like Matt Hasselbeck turned out to be. So, he would be for sure the deserved most hyped backup.
Third down, who has more to gain this Sunday, week two against the Indianapolis Colts? Is it head coach Matt LaFleur or is it quarterback Malik Willis?
I mean, obviously both have a lot to gain.
Of course.
Like in Malik Willis's case, it's an opportunity to show all the people that are negative about him that he can play, even under very challenging circumstances. I mean, assuming he gets to play. But for me, I think this is a great opportunity. And I was going to ask Matt LaFleur about this. You know, obviously, you know, he's hyper competitive. But when situations like this come along, where you really have to push yourself as a coach to figure out ways to help your team win, does he enjoy that challenge? Obviously, he'd rather have his stud young quarterback healthy and ready to go. But do situations like this, you know, is this invigorating for you as a coach to have this challenge? This is a chance for him to show, hey, man, I can put together a game plan that we can win with Malik Blank and Willis, who plenty of people think can't play. So, you know, they obviously both have something to gain. I would just say this. I think Matt LaFleur, despite some doubters last season at times, I think he's established himself as a very good football coach. So I don't think he needs validation of doing that in this game. So I would say that Malik Willis probably has more to gain.
Yeah, I lean LaFleur, actually, Jason, because we know how good he is offensively. I just don't think that off of one performance, Willis can go ahead and parlay this into a long-term backup job, to be real honest with you. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't, unless he goes out and just lights the place on fire, where they get a nice win and the offense is safe and sound for Willis to play mistake-free ball. I think a lot of credit has to go to the head coach, but obviously, like you said at the beginning of your answer, both can gain a lot from this one. Fourth down, final down. You are a proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin, at Madison, of course, as is the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Chris Ballard, and the running back, Jonathan Taylor. Do you go back at all with Chris Ballard? I really don't know, but I would imagine there's got to be some crossover between you two.
So there is, I did not know him. He's a little bit older than me. But he was a wide receiver in the Don Morton era of Wisconsin football. My freshman year was Barry Alvarez's first year as Badgers coach. They went 1-10. They beat Ball State, and I sat in the student section and absolutely hated it. Because I had wanted to be a Badger since I was 4 years old. I knew I wanted to go to Wisconsin. I knew I wanted to be a sports writer. And I wanted to watch the football games. I understood that they weren't very good and that it was a new head coach. But all the chance to eat blank, blank you, and some random person behind you rowing and pulling on you, like, I'm trying to watch the game, man. Like, I've been waiting for this my whole life. So that was the only year I sat in the student section. I was in the press box the next year. But I didn't know Chris when we were both there briefly. We crossed over. But, yeah, people forget that he is a former Badger. And he's got some challenges with his football team right now. That's for sure. But Jonathan Taylor, I'm very eager to see what he does. You were talking earlier about the run defense looking Joe Barry-esque. This guy's a pretty good football player. So their run defense better be better this week than it was last week.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor's an elite back. And like I said earlier, the joke I've been making all week, if you're an elite back or you're David Montgomery, you typically do pretty well against the Packers defense.
Not very nice.
Is David Montgomery an elite back?
Pretty good.
He's pretty good, but is he elite?
Apparently underrated by you, at least.
I like David Montgomery. He's a touchdown
like
scorer.
It.
But Jahmyr Gibbs is their number one back. So I have a hard time calling him an elite pass rusher. Jason Wilde, you can get him on
Don't
Twitter.
Don't call him an elite pass rusher because he's a running back.
Well, that's not what I meant. Misspeak. You know what I meant.
Not an elite radio guy. How about that?
That's why this is on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. At Jason J. Wilde on Twitter. I'm at Alex_Strofe. It's Packers-Colts from Lambeau Field at noon on Sunday. Green Bay Game Day gets you started at 9 o'clock. Jason joins us for the 10 o'clock hour. Myself, Gabe Neitzel, and Super Bowl champ Jarrett Bush getting you set from just outside of Lambeau Field. Jason, any final thoughts ahead of Packers-Colts?
Well, how much thought have you put into a new name? This is week 3. We're still calling it Weekly Wildy. At least it's not W-E-A-K-L-Y.
Ooh, that that's would be an idea.
No, that would be disrespectful. So have you put any thought into this? Like, so there's a book about the Jets when Mike Pettine was their defensive coordinator and Rex Ryan was the head coach.
Sure.
And it's called Collision Low Crossers, which is basically a term for the low crossing patterns and the collisions that the defense wants to create on those plays to throw them off, right? So it's a more obscure football term. So, like, instead of two-minute drill or ineligible downfield or something, we need a football term that is a little more obscure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk to you next week on Weekly Wildy. That's Jason Wildy. I'm Alex Stroh. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Can't wait.